Lake Effect continues on WUWM Now. I'm Bonnie North. All this week on the show, producer Stephanie Lecce has been exploring issues surrounding death and dying. And while death is as old as time itself, the study of it is considerably younger. The relatively new and growing field of thanatology, that is, the study of death, from the Greek word thanatos, extends beyond just the medical aspects of dying. Rather, it crosses boundaries through interdisciplinary fields, and as technologies in medicine and society advance, so does the research. Among those researching death and dying in the 21st century is Dr. Eileen Cupid. She's a professor of human development at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay and the author of Dying, Death, and Grief in an Online Universe. She's also the president of the Association for Death Education and Counseling, a professional organization for researchers and academics that was originally started in 1976. Cupid tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce more about how this field of study has developed.
The first courses on death and dying started to appear late 60s, early 1970s, and at that point in time, they were considered renegade classes, because what we have done as a culture is do as much as we possibly can to stick death in the closet and try to lock the door and throw away the key. So in the early history of the field, there has been a lot that has been said about what a death-phobic culture we are and how much that is hurting us, because we are not really confronting the issues that we, each and every one of us, has to confront. Technology, and that I'm particularly, I'm talking about medical technology, has really changed the face of our lifespan in this country. People are living longer. They're living longer with chronic degenerative diseases. And it's the aging of the baby boom population. All of these factors have come into play that have really caused us to open up that door a crack. And now virtually on every college campus, there are courses on death, dying, and loss. We call the field thanatology, as a matter of fact. And there are workshops, there are community forums and discussions, there are books that are being published every day about this topic. People are hungry for this knowledge.
Tell me a little bit more about how it's become one of those areas where it's an interdisciplinary approach that's being taken to tackle it.
One of the things that I love about the field of thanatology is that it is inherently interdisciplinary. You can't really understand this profound experience, whether we're talking about the grief experience, the dying experience, confronting our own mortality, without drawing in, you know, our philosophical approaches, what has happened in the history of this country, looking at it from an economic standpoint, looking at it in terms of cultural issues with death and dying. If you really want to understand the totality of the experience, you have to really bring in all different kinds of approaches in order to get a fuller understanding. So that's why we consider it to be interdisciplinary.
I would imagine that's where an organization like the Association of Death Education and Counseling comes into play. Can you tell me a little bit more about the mission of this professional organization?
Well, this is an interdisciplinary organization. It's a relatively new organization. It came together as a group of people, both practitioners and academicians. It's not just the, you know, the classroom geeks like myself who are involved in it. It is people who are therapists, who are hospice workers, who are hungry for an ability to communicate with others in the field who felt very passionately about trying to help people in some of the most significant and intimate decisions that they ever have to make in their lives. And so it started to coalesce in 1976. They called it the Forum. And then it became a more formal organization, the Association for Death Education and Counseling. It is an international organization. We have members from all over the world. We have an annual conference where we get some fascinating speakers who come who talk about issues like dying well, what's happening in South Africa, in Australia, the whole issue about what do we mean by complicated grief, questions about does grief counseling really help people, how do we deal with the fact that we're becoming such a diverse society, how do you help people who are, let's say, from Asian American background compared to somebody who is African-American in terms of the issues that they're confronting and they're facing and the way in which they deal with the medical system. These are all things that people in ADEC are concerned with, that they communicate with. So it has a very strong educational function, a networking function, a way that research can inform practitioners and practitioners can inform researchers. It's a very dynamic and exciting organization.
Are we starting to see more of the research that's being done, say, by academics and medical researchers being translated into practice?
Yes.
Within treatment and maybe even palliative settings?
Absolutely. I mean, there are so many different areas where translating research into practice and having research informed by practitioners has become really important. It's become very important in the medical field. It has become very important in the mental health field. It's become important in education and certainly in terms of the field of thanatology. We now have many speakers who talk about bridging research and practice. We have a special session at the conference that addresses specifically those issues. You know, the issue about whether or not grief counseling is effective is one of those research into practice issues, for example. So the issue about whether or not grief and bereavement should have a clinical diagnosis for psychiatry is another one of those very hot-button issues that is now coming out. The issue about, do people really die in stages, which everybody talks about, you know, he's in denial, you have to reach acceptance. Does that really exist? Is that something that we should be encouraging people to do? Or maybe people don't do this. That has all been some of the work that has been discussed in this organization and in the literature.
Well, tell me a little bit more about your research, particularly how internet usage is affecting the way we deal with death and our grief.
Well, I kind of fell into this. One of the ways in which I fell into this is one of my main research areas has been on college student grief. And the way in which I studied it was by creating an internet survey. And from that, I became interested. It's profound how much technology has affected the way in which we do death. From Facebook communication, now this is sometimes the first way that people find out that a loved one has died is through Facebook. Through, we have now online memorialization. You can order a casket from online. You can learn about different death and dying rituals from communication with people across the globe. There are now issues about what happens to your email when you die? There's all kinds of things that need to be considered. Now, if you need a grief therapist, and there are not that many, and if you want to find somebody who, let's say, is in Tennessee, you can Skype. And now we're having Skype therapy sessions. There's just so much that technology has impacted with regard to this field. It's pretty profound.
I would imagine, too, that this is just one example of how advances in our culture and our society, whether technological or otherwise, are changing the way we think about death and dying.
That's true. In some respects, at least on the internet, you never have to die. You can be on a YouTube for forever. We have ways of manipulating the video images of people who have passed away so that they seem like they can communicate with you in the present. Some people leave email messages to their loved ones that can only be opened up. You know, it's kind of like, do not open until Christmas, but do not open this up until after I die. It's really changed our whole approach to what mortality and immortality means in some respects.
Does this make it more difficult to grieve then? If somebody is still there even after they've died, does that change how we grieve their loss?
For some people, yes, and for some people it could be a source of comfort. One of the things that does fascinate me about the whole grief experience is that it is one of those experiences that we as all human beings hold in common. No matter where you go on this planet, when somebody suffers a profound loss, that person's going to grieve it in some way. And yet, it is such an individual process. And what will give comfort to one person will be extremely disturbing to another.
You kind of touched on this, but how do we account for differences in culture and religion and philosophy when we're studying death and dying? I mean, there is so much diversity out there.
Well, I don't think you can understand the specifics of each culture, because within each culture, there is significant variation as well. I think that the best that you can do is respect the fact that not everybody views death and dying and the way in which we ritualize the death the same way. And that what might seem bizarre to us is not bizarre to them and serves a specific function. Usually, the rituals are there to affirm life, to create order out of chaos, and to find meaning in the death. And I think that that could be a common denominator across many cultures. And if you have that basic fundamental understanding, it becomes easier not to misinterpret what other people are doing. And that's really important. You don't want to disenfranchise people because of that. And as our society becomes more and more diverse, that kind of respect has to be understood.
It sounds a lot like this is a field of study that in many ways is still finding itself. There are so many questions to investigate.
Well, I don't know if it's finding itself. It's trying to keep up with how it's evolving. I mean, this is a very dynamic field, and it really necessitates that any professional who goes in this field has to really be on top of it. So that's why, in some respects, you know, having an organization like ADEC is so important, because part of it is just helping to disseminate information, because things are changing so much and so quickly, and yet the issues are so vitally important. We need to be on top of it. And again, for me, I think this educational mission is so important because we are so woefully ignorant. It's pathetic how ignorant we are as a nation with these very, very important questions. Just something as fundamental about what do you say to somebody who has lost a loved one? Most people are at a loss for words. So what they do is they avoid a bereaved person, which is just when you need people the most. People are avoiding you. And why do they avoid you? Because they don't know what to say. If we could just teach people appropriate things to say and the best way to help people, that in of itself would be of such great value.
Dr. Eileen Cupid, thank you so much again for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Dr. Eileen Cupid is a professor of human development at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, focusing on death, dying, and bereavement. She's the editor of Dying, Death, and Grief in an Online Universe, published by Springer Publishing Company. She's researching college student grief, internet use in the study of death and dying, and the effects of bereavement camps for children. She's also the founder and director of Camp Lloyd, a summer day camp for grieving children. We'll hear more about this camp later in the series. She's also the president of the Association for Death Education and Counseling. And there are links to more information and to our entire series on death and dying at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take a short break and then return with Jean Creighton, our astronomy contributor, who takes a look at some astronomical views we can see from our own backyards. Lake Effect returns with that in just a moment on WUWM.